Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. You're listening to the Council of Elders Call-In Talk Show. My name is Jansen Brooks, and today is October 2nd of the year 2021, and I want to welcome everybody to the show. Thanks for calling in today. Before we get started, let me just give you a brief background of the Council of Elders concept. It's a concept where we, as elders, try to instill wisdom and help young people navigate through life and deal with some of their concerns. And so today we have on the show a lady who works with the National Poor People's Campaign, and specifically the California Poor People's Campaign. Her name is Faye Wilson Kennedy, and Faye, I'd like to welcome you to the show today.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Brooks, for inviting me in the campaign to be part of your show today. I'm really looking forward for our discussion and dialogue.
Right. Well, I've been trying to get you on the show for a while, and I know you're a very busy lady, so I just thank you so much for taking the time to share with us today. You know, a lot of people, we hear, you know, about the Poor People's Campaign on television and so forth, but we rarely get a chance to talk to somebody personally about it and just learn more of the in-depth philosophy and activity. So that's some of the things that we're going to be talking about today.
But
Right. Can you just give us a little background about yourself before we get started?
Sure. So once again, my name is Faye Wilson Kennedy. I live and work and organize here locally in Sacramento, California. I grew up here in Sacramento, although Sacramento is not where I originated from. Originally, I'm from Alabama, Mobile. But even before I moved to Mobile with my family, I was born in a very small rural community in Choctaw County, Alabama, LISMA. And I was actually born at home. Because at the time, I was born in 1954, so that'll give you an idea of my age. I'm not embarrassed to talk about my age. I lived and grew up until I moved to California in a totally segregated society. And people think about that happened years ago. That didn't happen years ago. I'll be 67 years old the 13th of this month. So that's part of our most recent history. And so my parents, I was actually born at home because the hospital where the colored people could go was too far for my mother to make it. She had to make it on a dirt road, and I was coming a little bit too fast. But they turned the car around and took my mother back home, and I was born at home. And so my parents lived in the rural South for a while. They wanted a better life, and so my father took the test to work for the federal government, and he passed the test, and he and my mother, my eldest sister, both of my parents and my sisters are now deceased, and we moved to Mobile, and we lived there. And then around the mid-60s, the Air Force base where my father was working, Brooklyn Field, closing down as part of the shedding down of the bases. And so they decided on California, and particularly Sacramento. And what I'm always awed by they didn't have access to the internet. They didn't have access to, you know, technology that we have today. But they knew enough through their own research, and they selected Sacramento for two reasons, Sac State and UC Davis. They wanted my sister and I to have a better life, and for my parents and my parents' generation, they saw education as a key to improving one's lot in life. And so that's why they selected Sacramento. Also at the time, you know, Sacramento has wonderful public libraries. And so here we are. Here I am in Sacramento some 40-some years later. And I'm really glad my parents made those tough decisions to come to Sacramento and to leave the family for a better life, because it has benefited me, it benefited them, it benefited my late sister and everything. So that gives you, I'm married. I currently live in Sacramento. As I said earlier, I have a stepdaughter who, we all grew up here in Sacramento, attended local schools. I graduated from CSUS, former teacher, former health educator, and just so glad to be, to live in Sacramento and reap some of the wonderful benefits, you know, even though people complain about housing, but Sacramento is a place where people can afford to buy a house, can afford to, you know, raise a family. So I'm really glad my parents made those decisions, and they did.
Right, right. I have to say, Miss Faye Wilson Kennedy, you sound like a very optimistic lady.
Well, you know, I would like to think I'm optimistic, and I think when you do the type of work with the Poor People's Campaign, you have to be optimistic, you have to be realistic, because it's tough work. You know, one of the things, like our name, the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival, you have to be really ready to push up your sleeve and work in coalition with a broad-based group of people and a fusion movement where we're working to unite the poor and impacted communities across the country, across California, and across Sacramento. And so we're actually, a lot of people don't realize, we're actually continuing the work of Dr. King in 1968, and he called for a revolution of values in America. So as you mentioned earlier, our national leaders, Reverend Dr. William Barber and Reverend Dr. Liz Steele Harris are our national leaders, and they do an excellent job representing the campaign, raising those critical issues, providing the moral guidance that help us all when we engage at the local level and at the state level around those critical issues. And then the campaign itself really has about five interlocking pillars that we have tried to address in our daily lives. So the whole thing around systemic racism, poverty, ecological devastation, militarism, and the war economy. And then, of course, some of the things that we're dealing with right now is the distorted moral narrative of religious nationalism. We are dealing with that right now in our country. All of these things are impacting all of us, but they're particularly impacting poor and impacted folks in communities and everything. So most of my work deal with those interlocking injustices and everything.
Right, right. Well, you mentioned something about the religious. How did you phrase that?
Okay. Sure. In the campaign, we call it the distorted moral narrative of religious nationalism. And you see it playing out every day when people want to take away the rights of all of us, but particularly the rights of poor people, the rights of people of color. And they try to use religion as a way to justify that. And like I said earlier, those are some of the things that we are fighting against. You see it a lot where people decide for whatever reason they don't want to get vaccinated. They don't want to wear a mask. All of those things is wrapped up in that distorted moral narrative of religious nationalism.
Oh, okay, okay. So if you were to say, if I were to say, well, what is the Poor People's Campaign?
Sure. So the Poor People's Campaign, as we know it today, its goal is to, it's a fusion movement where we bring together people across different cultural backgrounds, different racial backgrounds, different religious backgrounds, people with no religions. Everyone is welcome at the table. We have a big table, so to speak. And the whole thing, the whole point is to put poor people and impacted communities at the center of the discussion and helping our community, national community, understand that until we begin to address how we as a nation community treat the poor and not listen to their needs, not address those issues as it impacts them, we're not going to be able to move forward. And that's all tied into those interlocking injustices of systemic racism, poverty, ecological devastation, militarism, and the war economy. And what do we mean by that? Just think about how much money we spend on making war. We can't find money to house people, but somehow as a community, we can find money to make war. Somehow we can't find money to address the issue of poverty, but we can find money to make war. So it's things like that that we're constantly raising within our individual communities. And then also raising the issue of ecological devastation. Another way of thinking about ecological devastation is environmental justice, climate change. And we see that happening for the past 2 years. For example, in Sacramento, we have seen extreme weather. We've seen the past 2 summers of being extremely hot in Sacramento. We've had 3 and 4 days of temperatures more than 100 degrees. And, you know, that's pretty hot for us in Sacramento. And so that impacts people, particularly it impacts poor folks, because a lot of poor folks live in houses without air conditioning or live in housing without appropriate ventilation. And a lot of poor folks are unhoused. They're living on the street. So the whole issue of the environment impacts us all, but it impacts poor people and people of color at a disproportionate rate and differently.
Right, right, right. Well, we can get back to that in a minute, but tell us a little bit about, you mentioned the national leaders. Can you give us a little bit about them?
Sure. So both Reverend Dr. Barber and Reverend Dr. Liz are their ministers. They have their own congregation, and they are our leaders. They provide the leadership at the national level. They're engaging at the national level around those issues that I talked about. And then what we do is then take those issues back to our state, whether in California, Alabama, New York, and we actualize those issues at the state level. And then in Sacramento, we actualize those issues locally here in Sacramento. So you may see Dr. Liz or Dr. Barber on TV, you know, talking about the injustices of systemic racism, poverty, and how we need to rethink our budget and how we need to look at the budget to make it fair. And so they do that at the national level, and then it's our job as co-chairs and as state leaders is to bring that message back home to California and then bring it back home and localize it also.
Okay, so sounds
and
as well,
Liz
it's
Liz in New- I'm sorry.
A national
I'm sorry.
Organization with branches in all 50 states?
We have in about 43 states. Think of major states. We have a lot in southern states, in California, in western states, in Alaska, in Arkansas, places like that.
Okay, okay. Well, let me just say that we have Mrs. Faye Wilson Kennedy, who is the co-chair of the California Poor People's Campaign with us today. And if anyone has a question or a comment for Ms. Wilson Kennedy, you can press the number 1 on your phone, and she will address your questions or comments. So what are some of the activities that's going on nationally first, and then we can talk about maybe California after that?
Oh, sure. So you may have seen either read about it in newspapers, publications, or on the TV around the issue of the budget, getting the budget passed, voting rights. So these are some of the issues that we are dealing with, trying to eliminate the filibuster, because unless we eliminate the filibuster, we are not going to be able to address many of the issues that our communities really, really need. And so those are some of the issues that Dr. Barber and Dr. Liz are working on at a national level. And then once again, we try to translate that back in California and Sacramento. Really highlighting those issues are really, really important because it impacts people's lives. For example, when we were at the height of the pandemic, and particularly in 2020, our leaders at the national level spent a lot of time helping us understand how it was important for people to shelter in place, to when folks would have to leave, to wear a mask, to protect themselves, to wear a mask, to use gloves, to wash your hands, and do different things like that. So we were actually practicing what we would call basic public health. And that translated to when we would engage at the state level and at the local level, and then not to have large events. So when we would have events locally or nationally, they were online, and if they were in person, they were smaller events. So they weren't like hundreds of people or thousands of people. They were small events. We practiced social distancing. We wore masks. We did things like that. So those are some of the issues that we're tackling, and we still are tackling those issues, because right now we still are in a public health crisis, because even though we have the vaccine available, people for whatever reason don't take it. And so what we try to do is connect people where they live to where they can have access to the vaccine, as well as they can get tested, as well as for them to practice wearing a mask, socially distant, and answering questions if they may have those questions.
Oh, okay. I see we have a caller who has a question or comment. Caller 4600, would you state your name and where you're calling from?
Oh, this is Pianchi. How you doing?
All right.
Hi. Is your organization affiliated with the one guy out there, Eddie? Something, I can't think of his name, his last name. You know who I'm talking
I'm
about?
I'm not sure. Do you know what city he lives in?
They're in Sacramento. He's a preacher.
I don't know of
Eddie,
the person named Eddie.
Eddie something. Reverend. I can't think of it right offhand. But you made mention about you're working on the conditions that exist there in Sacramento, California, right?
Yes and no. So I'm one of the 4 co-chairs of the California Poor People's Campaign. So we have regions throughout California. I just happen to live and organize out of Sacramento.
Oh, so your regions is in California.
We have 7 different regions within the state of California. And for me, I live and organize out of Sacramento.
Okay, now, I stay in the Midwest. And we like the filibuster.
Mm-hmm.
I like the filibuster because it does what it does. It doesn't allow the other political party or any political party to just run lopshod. And I often wonder why come people in one state, you know, like want to impose something over the whole nation, whereas they are experiencing these things that you're working on in your own general location, your own region. So why not do away with that obstruction in California State House rather than trying to work at a federal level where it's going to affect me.
Okay. So I'm sorry. I didn't get your name. So
my name is Bianchi, and I'm a black African American. I'm a black American.
Okay. That's fine. The filibuster, first of all, you have a right to have your opinion, like I have a right to have my opinion. And so the filibuster right now is an obstructionist tool that's preventing our country from doing good things for all of us, whether you're black, whether you're white, whether you're Asian, indigenous. So the filibuster is not good for us. And so that's
who is
why
us, ma'am?
In the filibuster.
Yeah, could you explain who the us is?
The us is those folks who believe in social justice and within the Poor People's Campaign.
Okay, now, how about the other people who think that when you talk about social justice, I think you're talking about police brutality. How about the, you know, there's 14,000 policing authorities throughout the country and municipalities, they have a right to run their police department like they want to. So they don't see that. I know in some areas maybe you do, but in other areas they don't. And I think when people from outside come in and try to tell those in their own community how they should run things that's pertinent to them, I think that they're is being disrespectful. And I'm not talking about you in particular, because there's a lot of these movements that's going on.
Right.
So I think on this issue around the filibuster, I don't think you and I are going to agree. So I really appreciate you calling in and sharing your perspective and listening. And I really listen to you. So thank you very much. And hopefully one day
could you tell me one other thing before I go? What are the issues that you made mention something about issue? And Jonathan, why do you keep muting me? You don't want to ask me to come on your program, and I'm just asking questions. Now, ma'am, if I could ask that question again, you made mention about some things that you was working for or you feel that poor people are not receiving. And I was wondering what some of those things are. I'd like to know. Maybe I could comment on.
Okay. So the campaign at the national level, state level, and local level are working on issues around how poor people and impacted community members, how they're impacted around the issue of systemic racism, poverty, ecological devastation, militarism in the war economy, and the distorted moral narrative or religious nationalism. Were those the things that you were speaking of?
Well, yeah, you made mention about poverty. Now, one of the things that's done in order to alleviate poverty is education. And in some of these areas where you have a lot of poverty, the education is not – the education is, I guess you could say, is deplorable. But, for instance, when people, organizations come up with ways to kind of alleviate that, for instance, like school choice with vouchers, where parents who are working hard to make sure that their child don't go through a educational.
Bianchi, let me interrupt you. Maybe we should have a show with you as the guest. But we'll be a little bit off topic today.
Okay, I know you don't have but an hour, but I think that poverty issue is already being addressed, but people don't take advantage of it the way that they should, ma'am. I'm going to continue to listen.
Thank you, Jensen.
You
have a great day.
All right, so let's see. I guess I could say here in Sacramento, what are some of the activities that's going on?
Sure. So, for example, just last Saturday, we finished up a day-long climate justice festival where we brought the Sacramento community and really the Sacramento region together to really address the issue of the climate, but we tried to do it in a fun way because oftentimes, when people talk about the climate, they use a lot of numbers, they use a lot of words that the average person doesn't understand, right? And so what we did it in a fun way. It was an all-day event. Well, it was a couple of hours event. We had speakers, music. We had vendors. People could ask questions on a one-on-one basis to people who had much more detail. So we work on issues that are tied to those interlocking injustices that I talked about. We also, locally in Sacramento, we do a lot of work around the issue of housing. We do a lot of work with those who are unhoused, where we go into encampments, we mask up, we glove up, we go into encampments, and we provide basic needs. We have we work in coalition with other groups to do that. And then we raise the issues with the local elected officials. What are they doing about the whole issue of the housing crisis in general, and specifically about the housing crisis as it impacts those who are unhoused?
Okay. Yeah, I've noticed the homeless population in Sacramento in the last 3-4 years has drastically increased. And you say you're addressing that, the homeless issue?
Sure. Yes. And so let me try to give you a better picture of what's happening locally in Sacramento. And Sacramento is no different from what's happening. So we live in a society where people are having to, most people are having to work 3 and 4, at least 2 jobs to, who are making minimum wage. And they're just not able to pay rent. We won't even talk about buy a home, but just pay rent. Because in Sacramento, the average cost for a one-bedroom apartment or house is $1,800. And if you're making minimum wage, then even if you're making $15 an hour, you're not going to be able to afford a home. You know, you're not going to be able to afford a house. So it's things like that. And when we were in the middle, when we were in the pandemic in 2020, you had a lot of people lost their jobs or their hours were reduced. And so they lost their homes. They lost their housing. And so Sacramento on any given night has about 5,000 people who are unhoused, meaning they're living in fields, parks, vacant lots, behind strip malls, in neighborhoods. We have over 160,000 people who are unhoused in California. And almost every city in California, that's an issue because housing it's so critical for people, and people are not making enough money to afford to pay rent. Once again, we're not even talking about people being able to buy homes. And we saw a lot of people lose their homes that they once owned. So it's an issue that as a state and as a nation, we have to address how we're going to keep people in their homes. So at the end of September, the rent moratorium ended. And we're really afraid at the local level and statewide that we're going to see more people who are unhoused and more people with children who are unhoused. And that's not good. It's not good for anyone, but it's not good when children are unhoused living on the streets is that we attack, along with poor folks, along with people who are impacted by the housing crisis. We push up our sleeves. We work together to try to find solutions.
Okay. I've noticed that many of the people who are unhoused have mental challenges. How is that, or is that actually being addressed by anyone?
Sure. So one of the misconceptions that people have are that the majority of the people who are unhoused have mental health issues. When they started out, they didn't have mental health issues. Being unhoused has literally caused people to have mental health issues, okay? So just think, today you have a house. You and I are living in our house. And for whatever reason, a month from now, we've lost our housing. And that can literally drive you or me to have great mental stress. And that's oftentimes what happens. So we don't have enough mental health services for anyone in Sacramento. So even if you have health care, there's a waiting list in order for you to see a mental health provider. And if you are poor with or no insurance, the county of Sacramento doesn't have enough mental health providers. So it's further exacerbated by if you're unhoused. So the majority of the people who are unhoused may have not started out with mental health issues or drug issues, but being unhoused causes great stress on you. They spend most of their time figuring out when they're going to get their next meal, where they're going to stay, how they're going to stay warm if it's in the winter months, how they're going to stay cool if it's in the summer months, how they're going to have get access to clean drinking water. Things like that that you and I, who are housed, take for granted. When I get thirsty, I can go to my refrigerator. I can turn my tap on. When I need to charge up my cell phone, I can, you know, go to the nearest outlet and plug my phone in. When you're unhoused, you don't have access to those resources and those services. So your whole day is taken up in survival mode. And it's just not the unhoused. It's poor folks in general when they're making minimum wage. They're trying to figure out how they're going to accumulate enough money to pay their rent, to pay their utilities, to put food on the table, to put gas in the car if they have a car, so they can get to work, so they can get from point A to point B. So these are some of the issues that poor folks face on a daily basis, racial, ethnic background.
Right, right. It sounds like the Poor People's Campaign is an advocate, a voice for poor people. Would you say that's correct?
So yes and no. So we work alongside with poor folks, but and help build their capacity and to what they want, and they can speak for themselves. The challenge is people don't often ask poor folks what they want. They tell them what they want, but they don't always ask them what they want. So if you ask a person who's poor, and they say they want a job where they make enough money where they can pay their bills, and if you ask a person who's unhoused, they want housing. They don't want to live out on the street. They want to live in a house, an apartment, a duplex, a mobile home. But oftentimes we don't ask people those critical and essential questions. So we work with our unhoused brothers and sisters. We work with our poor brothers and sisters. We work right alongside them to address those critical issues. Because you know what? We're housed today. There's no guarantee that I won't be unhoused tomorrow.
Right, right. I see what you mean.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What is the Basic Needs Project?
Sure. So the Basic Needs Project was developed by one of my colleagues who serves on the local, who works at the local chapter, Brother Kevin Carter. He came up with this idea where we go out to encampments, homeless encampments throughout Sacramento, and we started with just visiting three or four encampments initially in 2019. And we provide basic needs. When we say basic needs, we mean food and clean drinking water. Because oftentimes, particularly in 2019, people could generally go and get clean drinking water. Pandemic hit and everything closed down. You remember, everything shut down. Fast food restaurants, libraries, community centers, where poor people could go, where unhoused people could go and get clean drinking water, right? Even some grocery stores closed. They were only open limited hours. So what we do in the Basic Needs Committee is visit encampments and provide those services. We provide masks. We talk to people about the importance of wearing masks, particularly in 2020. We talked about social distancing. We showed people how to social distance. And so what we're doing now, we're still providing the basic needs, providing food, clean drinking water, masks, and then we work with public health and other health-related entities to try to bring health-related services, whether it's getting vaccinated or just making sure if people are sick, getting them connected to a healthcare provider to meet their health needs. So those are some of the things that we do in basic needs. We call it just really common sense things that people who live on the street that need them.
Right. So you're actually helping them get food and clean drinking water?
Mm-hmm. Yes, we actually provide, we actually take food to them, take them clean drinking water, provide masks, and then right, working right alongside us are people who were formerly unhoused themselves or who are unhoused, helping us pass out the things, helping us talk to folks about the importance of wearing a mask, helping us sit up to do that. So that's why I said we work right alongside with those who are unhoused, those who are poor. So if you were to come with us one particular day, you would know, you couldn't tell who was housed, who were unhoused, because we're, you know, we're all doing the same thing.
Oh, okay, okay. Mm-hmm. Who are the Sacramento Poor People's Campaign local partners?
Sure. So some of our partners, so for example, I joined the campaign through an organization that my husband and I have been a part of since we were young college students called the Sacramento Area Black Caucus. It's a 40-plus-year-old organization, and it was through the Black Caucus when Reverend Barber came to visit Sacramento in 2017, I think it was. He came to St. Mark's United Methodist Church. He spoke. About four of us from the Black Caucus went to hear him, and he basically did a call out. He says, if you believe in what I'm talking about, and you think you can support it as an individual and as an organization, we need you. So I would say about 4 months later, a massive email and calls went out, and my husband and the organization, the Sacramento Area Black Caucus, we showed up down at the state capitol. I never will forget it. It was a cold December day. We showed up. And we've been involved with the campaign. So we have organizations like the Sacramento Area Black Caucus. We have organizations like the Sacramento Homeless Union. We have organizations like various Presbyterian churches that are involved. We have organizations like the South Sacramento Heart that's involved. We have organizations like Loaves and Fishes. So we have a variety of organizations that are involved and work with us in different ways. When we meet them, we have an organization called SHOC. It's called the Sacramento Area Homeless Organizing Committee. We have Peace Action that works with us. We have the Sacramento Climate Coalition that works with us. We have the Black Parallel School Board that addresses education issue that works with us. So we have a variety of things. So the Black Parallel School Board and the Poor People's Campaign in August, we delivered backpacks full of supplies to folks, families who were homeless, who were living in a motel voucher program that kids needed backpacks and school supplies. So we try to work with people still doing what they're doing, but trying to address the issue of poor folks specifically.
Oh, okay. So You work with the homeless, or are there any other groups?
We work with some of our partners are local neighborhood associations. So local neighborhood associations are part of our group, Southeast Village Neighborhood Association. We will work with almost anybody that believe in the goals and that are willing to work with us. And so when people say they want to get involved, we send them our principal. We have about 12 core principles. We send that to them. So our philosophy is we can disagree, but there can't be any violence, any physical violence, any verbal violence against each other. And then we almost can work with any group in Sacramento or throughout this group. We work with a group called NorCal Resist that does a lot of work with immigrant rights. We show up and support them. They show up and support us. So we're working on a variety of issues as they impact poor folks in Sacramento, in California, and then nationally.
Oh, okay, okay. You mentioned 12 core values, I believe. Can you tell us about a few of those?
Sure. So the core values include all people have a right to dignity and respect. People have a right to housing. It's different things like that. It's almost, when you think about it, it's almost like it's common sense things that we think everyone should know and have access to, you know, the fundamental principles. And so so when I joined the campaign early on, we actually had people sign the fundamental principles because we wanted to make sure everyone understood those fundamental principles and you agreed with them. And I always have a funny story because we tried to send them to people ahead of time and then afterwards, you know, follow up with them to see if, you know, if they have any questions. And then the very last one, principle, is, you know, the one about nonviolence. So this particular person, she had a copy and she was looking at the fundamental principles and she said, oh, I agree with this, I agree with this, I agree with this. And then she got to the very last one, which is about being nonviolent. And she says, oh, I can't, when somebody get me mad, Ms. Faye, I have to hit them. And I said, you know, in our campaign, there's no form of violence can be tolerated. You know, it's okay to be angry, but it's not okay to hit people. It's not okay to destroy property. It's not okay, you know, to use abusive language with people. So it's things like that. So those are some of the things that's discussed. And what I can do is follow up with you and send you a copy of those fundamental principles. And what we try to do at our local meeting is read those fundamental principles so people are really clear and have a clear understanding if that's what they want to get involved in everything.
Right. So, again, how can people, if someone is interested and want to get involved maybe in the Sacramento area and or nationally, is there a website that they can go to or a phone number they can call?
Sure. Okay. So we always encourage people to visit the national website, and it's just like its name, poorpeoplescampaign.org. It gives you a lot of information about the campaign. And then California Poor People's Campaign, we have a Facebook page. And then Sacramento Poor People's Campaign, we have a Facebook page. So you could visit either one of the social media. And then locally, if people are interested in getting involved locally, they can call the number I'm about to give you, area code 916-484-5025. And then, ask for them. Mm-hmm. We'll ask them for their name and email. And matter of fact, we have our October reading is coming up. That's going to be Monday, October 25th from 6:30 to 8:30. It's open to all. It's one way to see if people are interested in getting involved with the organization. Our meetings right now are via Zoom because we're really in the middle of the pandemic. And so people can join us that way. We do some things we call actions. We do some actions in the community. There tend to be smaller, once again, trying to practice social distancing and hearing, wearing masks, and different things like that.
Oh, okay.
And the information is also on our Facebook page.
Oh, okay, okay. So basically, someone Googles Poor People's Campaign Sacramento, they can get you up. They do it.
Yes.
They can also do it nationally, too. So how is the Sacramento Poor People's Campaign structured?
Sure. And let me think. I think that's a great question. So let me even explain to you how we're structured. So at the national level, there's a National Poor People's Campaign, and they have a governing board. And each state has a state coordinating committee and with either co-chairs, tri-chair. And because California is so big, we have four co-chairs. I have the honor of working with four dynamic women. They just happen to be women this time around. In the past, they were men. And so my four co-chairs are from different regions in California. So Nell Mahan is from the Bay Area. It's actually the largest region because it's 9 counties. And then I have Reverend Reverend Dr. Beth Johnson from the San Diego area. And then we have Rose Escobar from the Inland Empire area. And then, of course, myself right here from the Sacramento Valley region. And then in California, we have what's called the Coordinating Committee. They're the decision-making body, representative from each region. We have 7 regions in California. There's 2 representatives from each region. So I'm on it representing Sacramento. Brother Kevin Carter also is on it representing Sacramento. And then locally in Sacramento, we have a what's called a core leadership team, which is about 15 people. We meet on a quarterly basis. We determine monthly agendas. We communicate with each other. And then we have a body of anyone and everyone who considers themselves a member of the Poor People's Campaign, as long as they agree to our principles, and it can not only agree but adhere to those principles. That's how we're structured at the national level, at the state level, and then at the local level. And then within, we have working groups. So we have a faith working group. We have a political education working group. We have a working group working on environmental justice issues. So that's how we are structured, and that's how we do the work of the campaign. And we're constantly recruiting people, trying to get them involved, trying to work with people at the level that they're at in terms of how they want to engage with the campaign.
Right. I'd like to regress to a little history, and I think you started talking about this earlier. I believe it was the 1968 Poor People's March on Washington. I think you was that kind of the impetus for this Poor People's Campaign.
Correct.
That idea.
Correct. Yes. So you remember when after Dr. King was assassinated, you know, a lot of the things that he wanted to do wasn't able to happen for a variety of reasons. A lot of the country's resources was involved with the war, and continued to take up and eat up a lot of our national resources. And so the plight of poor and low-income people just kind of like fell by the wayside. That's not to say different organizations at the national level were not addressing them. They were. But there was not a comprehensive organization looking at that. And so one of the things I like about the Poor People's Campaign at the national level, you can go to the Facebook, you can go to the website, and on the website you'll see the principles. You'll see a list of our demands. You'll see the covenant of nonviolence. You'll see our Jubilee platform. You'll see the 14 policy priorities. You'll see our anchor organization. You'll see all of that. So all of that has been written, outlined for people, and the information is right there for everyone to see. And so that's one of the things that we all like about the Poor People's Campaign, that the information is available for everyone to see. You can decide, and the whole focus, I always have to keep coming back to it, is that there's 140 million poor and low-income people of this nation, of every race, class, sexual orientation, religious, non-religious, no religion, that are impacted by poverty. And that if we really are going to change things in this country, if we really are going to change how people live, we have to begin to address poverty. And so you can do that if you're a Democrat, you can do that if you're a Republican, you can do that if you are Peace and Freedom. We're not turning anyone away. But the most important thing is poor people have to be at the center of the discussion. They have to be at the center of making the decisions. They are part of our leadership.
Right. So that's very good to hear. Now, did you have anything maybe on your mind that you wanted to share with us today that maybe I haven't covered? Anything that you can think of that you would like to share with our audience?
Sure. So one of the things that I would really, really encourage people to do is to, and I know people have busy lives, right, is that when you have some downtime in your life, is go visit our website. Visit the Poor People's Campaign website, and whether you're in California or whether you're in a different state, and get involved either with the campaign or our partner organization, or we've been spending a lot of time talking with different groups, church groups, just different groups who are just trying to figure out how they want to get involved with the campaign. How could they get involved doing what's important to them? So let me give you an example. We had this one lady. She called up and she says, I have these fruit trees. I don't have time for meetings. I just want to donate fruit. How can I do that? So I said, and this was in 2020, right, where I said, you can either drop them off on my front porch, and which she did. And then she says, okay. Then we invited her to come, because once a month with our partner group, we do what we call a community breakfast or brunch near an encampment. So she then dropped off the fruit at one of the breakfasts. And then the next month she stayed a little bit longer where she just observed. So now she went from just providing the food to actually helping us serve the breakfast and the different things, to now actually attending our Zoom meetings and showing up for different actions and different things like that. So we try to work with people where they're at, and then, accept that that's all they can do for whatever reason. We did a call out that we needed more masks. So she made these beautiful masks for us and everything. So, yeah, so those are some of the things that we do. People can help us by passing out literature about the campaign, by sharing information about the campaign with their family members, with organizations that they may be a part of, with church groups that they may be a part of, with their neighborhood association that they may be a part of. And then, groups will then follow up and contact myself or other people in the campaign. And then we will, sit down either via Zoom or telephone conversation. Before the pandemic, we would do one-on-ones with people or show up at meetings or show up at events and do tabling, do different things like that.
Okay, so people can get involved in various ways, donating mm-hmm. food right. or donating time or perhaps even right. donating money,
right. So, for example, Chris Brown, who is a part of the Poor People's Campaign, who's also a part of the Sacramento Climate Coalition. So his contribution is connecting the two organizations together, because remember I said one of our interlocking injustices was the whole issue of ecological devastation. So he helps us better understand climate issues and environmental justice issues, how it impacts communities and what can be done about that. So people can get involved through their existing organization. We're not saying that you have to give up your organization. So I'm a member of the Black Parallel School Board, and so what I did is figured out a way how the two organizations can work together and support each other. I'm also a part of the library, the Friends of the Library, the Colonial Heights branch. And so before the pandemic, we would have family game night, where we would invite families in the area, and a lot of the families were low-income, poor families. Some were homeless. Some were lived in a house. They would come. They would engage. It was a good place for them to stay warm when it was cold. It was a good place for them to be when it was very hot. We provided some refreshment. They got some free or low-cost books. But they got a chance to engage with their children in a fun, safe way. And then we had community volunteers come in and join us at that particular event and everything. So those are some of the things that people can get involved with. And then we have various actions where we go to our, we show up at our city council meetings, either via Zoom or in person, and we make some good trouble. In the spirit of the late iconic civil rights leader John Lewis, we make good trouble. We have Diane trying to help them understand the issue of affordable housing, particularly for unhoused people, have to be addressed because they're dying on the street. So we do, we've had a couple of die-ins. We protested outside of a city hall around the climate issue. So we do different things like that.
Right, right. Well, up until now, I've only seen, you know, some of your national leaders on TV. And, of course, you know, they can only talk so much, you know, on television shows and so forth. But in talking to you,
right,
I've gotten a chance to maybe do an in-depth sort of review on what you do. So just in a couple minutes, what is the day in the life of Faye Wilson Kennedy in your, you know,
so,
work campaign?
Sure. So I organize, because I'm one of the co-chairs at the state level as well as at the local level. So we're addressing those environmental justice issues. We just participated in a local press conference around the crisis that was happening at the borders with our Haitian brothers and sisters. So we're doing things like that. So I may get a call asking me to come out and support issues around the push for the increase of the minimum wage for $15 an hour. On any given day, we get requests for us to support issues that are in, that really are in line with the national as well as the state issues and demands. So it's, I tell people it's never a boring day. I get a chance to organize with some outstanding state organizers, working literally in communities in poverty. I'm working with people who are working in multiple languages, who are trying to engage folks who are living in some pretty dire situations. And right now, we're really all afraid, since the rent moratorium was lifted, what's going to happen to all of these families, particularly with children? How are they going to be impacted? And so unless we can begin, particularly in California, until we can begin to address the issue of affordable housing, we're not going to be able to solve a lot of the challenges that impact us all. Because if you don't have stable housing, that means you don't have stable families, which means parents can't engage with their children around education issues. That means parents are going to miss work. So it's housing, stable and affordable housing is a staple for families.
Right, right. So, Ms. Faye Wilson Kennedy, you've been such a wonderful resource for us, finding out more information about something that we see on TV and get a little bit of information about, but you brought it more or less home to us, and so we certainly appreciate that. We got about another minute to go. So basically, if people want to help, they can contact a local Poor People's Campaign office, probably just by Googling them, you know, and we all do
sure.
Google nowadays.
Sure.
And,
right. So if someone lives in LA, if someone lives in LA, they can give me a call and we'll try to connect them with the LA region. If someone lives in San Diego, we'll try to connect them with the San Diego region. If someone lives in the Inland Empire area, someone lives in the Bay Area, if people are on Facebook, they can go to the California Facebook Poor People's Campaign, send us a message. We'll try to connect you to the entity.
Got about 10 seconds, and I want to thank you again for coming on, Ms. Wilson Kennedy, and everybody have a great day.
Thank you very much. Take care, everyone.
Okay, let's see. I'm gonna hang up and call you right back, okay?
Okay, that's fine.